everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report. It's a special week because it's impeachment week, which only comes once a year. It's weird how that works out. But anyway, it does. And so we're going to be covering it. I have some questions I want to ask the nation and the former vice president about what was revealed yesterday. We're going to get an idea of what Republicans think of what was presented yesterday, as well as Fox News. We've got a guest on Fox talking about stimulus checks and student loan cancellation that is giving the worst take that I think I've seen in a while. And we will be closing out the show with the return of Meanwhile In, our little news roundup. Some serious, some not, of stories from around the world. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And the person who's going to be joining us on this news voyage, Jason Carter. How's it going, Jason?
John, hi. Hello. Hi, guys.
Glad to have you here. And man, you're bringing the energy. Perhaps because Jason is brought to you by Monster.
Boom. Hey, and by the way, Bougie Dragon is drinking the non-coffee Java one. This one is Monster Rehab Tea Lemonade and Energy. Yum. Wow.
I love that, like, they put in tea and lemonade. And they were like, what are we forgetting? Oh, energy.
And all the artificial ingredients that are on the back of the can, that's what they forgot. I don't even read that anymore. I just say slurp, slurp, and keep it pushing.
Exactly. This is, most people don't know, but in the old Ninja Turtle movies, the ooze was just this. But anyway, because of that sort of insult, you should rest assured this show is not actually sponsored by Monster. We just talk about it for free for some reason. We're not good at building our portfolio of sponsors. But anyway, Jason, thank you for being here. Before we launch into everything, what do you got going on? Anything you want to promote?
You know what? Jason Unleashed right now is on hiatus. I also want to promote the facial hair I'm growing. It's a new thing. So bear with me as it sprouts and I enter manhood at 41 years old. But no, I'm trying. John, your beard is so epic. And I thought, like, I want to be cool. So I decided to do it. You guys tweet me at JDC Forever or go to my Instagram at Jason Carter Official and let me know what you guys think. Should I keep it? Should I become a black Gandalf? Sophie in the control room says, John, she's here for it. She's giving me a thumbs up. So the ladies like it.
Yeah, we're gonna have to give it a minute for the audience to weigh in, but I would imagine that the reaction of the nation to Jason Carter saying, I want to look more like Johnny DeRola, is you're going in the wrong direction. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see. Now, a couple things to announce. One, national holiday, you should already know about it. Hopefully you have work off, is the birthday of my wife, Arlene, who I don't know if she's watching now, but it is her birthday. So happy birthday to my lovely wife. We're gonna be celebrating a little bit later on. Also, arguably as epic and important, Carlos put together some amazing badges for membership on YouTube. So we've had our YouTube membership program for like a little bit less than 2 months. But now, depending on how many months you've been a member, you're gonna automatically get a badge that starts off as a dragon egg all the way up to, and no one is gonna be able to qualify for this for a few months, a dragon breathing fire. So just a fun little extra thing. I'm looking at the chat right now and I see a lot of eggs, some eggs with a little dragon head poking out of it. So just a fun little thing that Carlos and the rest of the membership team put together for our YouTube members. We're trying to see if we can get 50 new members today during the pre-show. We got quite a few. I'm gonna quickly check in and see how we're doing. And it looks like so far, my internet is slow. That's what it's looking like so far. So we'll see what happens with it. Wait. This is exactly how Anderson Cooper's show goes. Do you know that? You may not watch it.
Yes.
This is what he does on his show. Okay, we're making pretty good progress. We'll see how it goes as the show goes on.
First world problems are now slow internet speed. They have people writing and posting Wall Street Journal ads to AT&T furious about their internet speed. You know, that's when the S has hit the fan. And I'm here for it because when the internet speed's garbage, my whole day, I want to like flip every table at Applebee's. That's how pissed it makes me.
Oh my God. He's getting wilder as his beard grows. Did you notice that? It's the Thor effect.
The Thorfinn, anyway, but I am not an angry black man. Someone on Instagram and on Twitter said I was an angry black guy on TDR. Never that.
He's an angry bearded man. That's what he
there
is.
You go.
Anyway. Okay, now with that, Why don't we jump into this thing, Jason?
For sure.
Okay, let's do it. There was a lot that was revealed yesterday during the impeachment trial, but I found to be one of the most fascinating moments when we got a little bit more of a timeline of what exactly happened with Mike Pence. We saw a video of Mike Pence being rushed out of the Capitol chambers right ahead of the mob moving in. Mike Pence, of course, was one of the prime targets for this mob. They were chanting that they wanted to hang him. They'd erected a gallows. They were calling for him to be brought out. He is lucky to have escaped with his life. That is what I'm saying. That's what a lot of people think, but not everyone reacted to the near miss of Mike Pence there. We found out about a phone call that happened while all of this was developing between Donald Trump and Senator Tommy Tuberville, who said when he got a call during all this, I said, "Mr. President, they just took the vice president out. I've got to go." So he revealed this to Politico last night, saying he cut the phone call short amid the chaos. So that call had already, we already sort of knew about it, but we didn't know exactly what happened on it. The detail that Tuberville informed Trump his vice president was in danger is a new and potentially significant development for House prosecutors seeking Trump's conviction. It occurred just around the time that Trump sent a tweet attacking Pence for not having the quote courage to unilaterally stop Joe Biden's victory. And since then, Trump never indicated publicly that he was aware of Pence's plight, even hours after Tuberville told him so. So let's look at the timeline. House managers say the call took place shortly after 2 p.m. Pence was evacuated from the chamber at about 2:15 p.m. And Trump sent his tweet at 2:24. And in case you don't remember this, this is the tweet that Trump apparently sent just moments after he was told his vice president had to be hustled out of the room so that he would not be murdered by this mob. He said, "Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones, which they were asked to previously certify. USA demands the truth." That was how he responded to this news, Jason. Like he had just been rushed out and he's like, he didn't do what he should have done. Not thank God the guy who's loyally stood by me for 4 years wasn't murdered.
Right, John, first let me start by saying that listening to the trial yesterday was one of the most riveting and fascinating things I've ever heard, because Trump's tweets are incriminating him. Like even they said it themselves. The prosecution is using Trump's own words against him, one. And to your point, any human being, at least I would think, would jettison any kind of hangups they have against someone in favor of saving someone's life, right? Am I remiss and crazy in having that kind of thought process? So for Trump to send that tweet, sorry, I'm choking up because I'm just so emotional about this. So for Trump to send that tweet after getting that news is indicative of the POS, and I can say that because he's out of office now, that he is. I'm not surprised by that. And I find it truly fascinating and also very eye-opening. Again, we're gonna go into the timeline of everything that transpired yesterday and what they're using in the trial, but he had to have known this was coming, right? And loyalty no longer exists, well, probably never existed in politics, but Trump has truly shown that loyalty is a novel idea that is dead and probably isn't returning ever. Because sell out someone, as you said, blindly blindly and without the shadow of a doubt supported you, even though this person, and I like to think Mike Pence is a smart man. He obviously has to be a smart man to ascend to the heights that he has, even though he probably knew in his heart of hearts and in the back of his mind that he was following a maniac. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. I'm not surprised, but at the same time, I am surprised.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like I feel bad for him.
Right.
They tried to kill him. They still hate him. He is still like, not a lot of people are saying this. If you were Mike Pence, you have to still be scared. Like they still would, they still think, due in no small part to tweets like we just showed you, that Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done, which we cannot repeat this enough. There was nothing Mike Pence could have done to overturn the result. If he 100%. Could have done something and did it, it would have been insane and anti-democratic, but he also couldn't. He was the Vanna White of that day. It was a ceremonial thing. In theory, they could just automatically turn those things around, but they have someone there for the ceremony. That was Mike Pence.
Right.
Trump already knew that when he tweeted that. They had had a talk that Trump was infuriated by days earlier, where Pence was like, dude, I can't do anything. I'd love to overthrow democracy for you. Seriously, I would, but I can't. And Trump apparently either is so much more devoted to the big lie than he is to Pence, or just kind of wants Pence to be killed, that he keeps lying about what Pence could have done, even after he had to be rushed out of the chamber. That is madness. And madness. It was a big part of yesterday, but I really don't think that all of the implications of it were made clear yesterday of how crazy that actually is.
Well, because there's, John, they weren't, but there was so much to unpack yesterday. And to your point, one, I love how you said Mike Pence, you likened Mike Pence to Vanna White. Nice. Secondly, right, it's compulsory, right? What Mike Pence had to do was compulsory, obligatory of the title that he had. The base that stormed the traitorous people that stormed the Capitol saw Mike Pence as a traitor, which I find it's like kettle pot black, right? You stand for democracy, you stand for the American people, the Constitution. This is our constitutional right, but everything you did was in the absence of those things storming the Capitol. And to your point, which is amazing, Mike Pence is absolutely probably still feeling still fearing for his life. And I will say though, that's kind of the screwing he gets for the screwing he did, right? You were able to be in this office for 4 years. You were so many things that were egregious and derogatory and derailing of marginalized groups of people and people who needed the support of the American government. And you had no problems with that. This is your bad karma coming home to roost, if you will, if that makes sense. So on one hand, yeah, I don't think anyone's life should be endangered, but at the same time, yo, Mike, I mean,
yeah,
you kind of had this coming.
Yeah, well, I will say you cannot be totally surprised. I'm gonna back away from you had this coming, because nobody has political violence coming, but you cannot be surprised. I assume is sort of what you mean. That, like, well, yeah, the idea that loyalty doesn't earn you anything with Trump, and the second you mildly inconvenience him, he will throw you to the wolves, is a long established fact. Pence is not the first person. Pence has sat there as he's seen this cycle play out with any number of different people. So when it finally comes to you, the only thing you're really allowed to feel is a sense of inevitability, basically, that this was always going to happen as long as you participated in the sick system.
Right, and John, let me offer clarity to what I was trying to say, and just to piggyback on what you're saying, I'm not saying no one deserves to have violence enacted against them. What I'm saying is that this type of negative reaction and what you're experiencing, as you just said, was bound. Making Pence a victim, he is a victim in some instances, much like the other people who were innocent bystanders throughout all this. They are victims as well. But just Pence's involvement doesn't lean on giving him a pass, if that makes sense.
I agree. And in fact, let's double down on that. So I have a question for Mike Pence. Where the hell are you, man? Where the hell are you? Like, after all that we saw on the 6th, all that's been happening since then, all that's being revealed in the trial, where is Mike Pence, the guy who that mob wanted to murder? They literally wanted to hang him outside of the Capitol building. They did so because Donald Trump had sent them to do it, that he had been building up this fiction that Mike Pence could or should overturn the election to benefit him. And for people who say that that was not Trump, then who the hell led them to believe that Pence was responsible for this? If not Trump, nobody, it was just Trump. And so all of that happened. And, you know, since then, bear in mind, advisors to former President Donald Trump say he hasn't expressed any remorse for what happened. Pence, who plans to keep laying low during the trial, has not quite patched up his relationship with Trump. That's what a source says. What? How is it on him, first of all? The dude sent a mob to murder him. And what, is he supposed to send him an edible arrangement? It ain't on him. He evaded murder. But anyway, right. They did talk though. And the source said that Pence and Trump discussed everything that happened on January 6th. So presumably that includes Pence having to flee from a murderous mob, Trump like attacking him on social media after he had to flee and after Trump knew about it. Now the source says Pence got his point across at the meeting afterward. I would love to know what that point is.
What?
But Trump, we don't know. And Trump didn't express remorse to Pence when they finally talked, even though Pence had said it's the ultimate betrayal. He didn't express any remorse to him, with the source saying that's not his style. Well, that's true. It's a mature, adult, rational thing to express remorse. That's not his style. But the source said it's likely that both men will be able to move on after the events surrounding January 6th, and time will heal things. Well, that's beautiful. It's a great lyric, maybe, to some old school song. But in this, I have to say, why will time heal things? Pence knows exactly what happened. He is refusing to talk about it. It would be incredibly powerful were he to come out and speak, to testify at the trial, because he was almost murdered by this proto-dictator. He's not doing that. Now, granted, he's the victim. I guess he's not obligated to do anything, but it would be really powerful, and he's not doing it. So we get to ask why. Where is Mike Pence? Why is he being silent? What does he value more than the country understanding not just the overall danger that Trump exposed us to, but that he individually was exposed to as a result of Donald Trump? I would love answers to those questions, and I feel like we're probably not going to get any of them.
We're not going to get any of those unless Pence writes a hate politics book like Omarosa and everyone else that has defected from the Trump administration. We may get that via Schuster Books in the coming year. Until then, I want to say this though. Pence probably is laying low because I would imagine, John, that what has transpired has been somewhat, if not traumatic for him. Okay, he has a family. This is a human being. Like, let's humanize the man for just a second. Great question. What has been the conversations behind closed doors that is still allowing him to have allegiance to Trump and not sell Trump down the river the way Trump has been selling him down the river? That to me as a man, I can understand, because once you screw me over, and again, loyalty is everything to me. Once that has been thrown out the window, all bets are off. You made a choice. That's a choice. People say, oh, you make mistakes. Time heals all things. All those manifestations drive me up the wall when you're an adult, because you make choices to do those things. It's all premeditated, much like the tweets and the whole thing on January 6th, which I think was premeditated. Those actions between the relationships you have with your inner party and your inner circle are premeditated. So for Mike Pence to not have that moment and say, okay, look, here's what really went down, because I put the American people first. Because also, after this is all said and done, John, I would imagine Mike Pence wants to have a career and a life and some sort of existence post the administration. And he can absolutely have that. He can, because right now he's in a great position to be, as we said, the victim. This is the only time he's had to be the victim. But
yeah,
I think that he's probably still traumatized by this and wants to lay low until the dust settles, which I don't blame him for doing. Maybe he's trying to protect his family. There's a whole myriad of logical reasons why. But for him not to come out and give some kind of statement that, as you said, would be immensely powerful is also immensely suspicious.
Yeah. I definitely agree. And somewhere I know that Mike Pence is watching this show. So Mike Pence, come on, man, at least DM me.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Anyway, let's read a few comments from the audience before we move on to other impeachment-related news. First, a super chat from Dragon Song. Yes, you said, "Not sure why Nightbot deleted my super chat in pre-show. I asked if we get little eggy badges on Twitch too and wish Dragon Wife a happy birthday with an emoji. I'll try again, sans emoji. Happy birthday, Dragon Wife." Thank you for that. In terms of the badges, so the difference between Twitch and YouTube is that on YouTube, we have the Young Turks channel and we have my channel. So my channel can be specific to my channel. On Twitch, it's the whole network. So it wouldn't make sense to have dragon related badges for the whole thing because multiple shows film in there and all of that. But they do have a lot of badges. They have very cool emojis and everything too. So maybe we can get a dragon egg emoji or something like that, or a little dragon. I don't know. But anyway, there is going to be that difference there. Big Gay Dragon says, "Yay, Jason's here. Sending love to both of you."
Thank you for that.
Sea Turtle Dragon says, "Jason, the kitten dragons and I are so happy you're with John today. We love you. Happy Friday Eve. Love the facial hair. It looks great on you. Happy birthday to you, my John." That was very
keeping
nice.
It now, guys. That's still the deal.
Marcus Otero says, "Jason on the bridge of Casadun, you shall not grift." It's funny.
Wait.
Let's see. Lazy Peon says, "I just want to congratulate Michael Shore on fulfilling his dream of ending up as evidence in Congress." I don't know if you saw, Jason, but they used a TYT video in the impeachment. Okay, that was pretty cool. Morik says, "My aunt has passed yesterday from COVID. She was hospitalized for several weeks after ignoring the symptoms for over a month. Stay safe, Dragon Squad." Morik, that is incredibly sad. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Wow. Kirsten says, "There once was a jerk named Mike Pence who decided to sit on a fence about children in cages and corruption and rages and now deserves his own sentence." Well, he's going to be just fine, assuming that Trump's mob doesn't track him down. Over on Twitch, Cheeky Rage Beast subscribed for 12 months. Damn, Cheeky, from the very beginning. Thank you for that. Mojo Quid subscribed for the 7th month and says, "Pence is more Machiavellian than smart, but potato, potato. Been a great 7 months. Thanks for keeping me grounded." Thank you for that, Mojo Quid. Let's see. Jose the Yellow subscribed for the 7th month and says, "7 months of watching on Twitch feels like only yesterday I was watching the stream by candlelight on ye old TYT website." That's funny. Alien Sock Puppet says, "AOC described the attack from her POV. Pence is still in hiding." Exactly. Let's see. Okay. Eddie O'Donnell says, "I have a question for you and Jason for the show today. There's speculation going around that the Neera Tanden hearing was held yesterday morning to prove on the record that Republicans have read tweets, catching them in the lie if I don't read Twitter. Or do you or Jason think there's any truth to that?" No, I don't think so. Like, the Republicans were participating too readily in the whole thing about the tweets. I think it works out in that way to some extent, but no, I don't necessarily think so, but thank you for the theory. MacBain says, "One way to go, Jason, is to grow some fuzz on your chin. Then you can pensively stroke it while you ponder life, the universe, and everything." That is a nice
look,
bonus.
I was advised against that, as a matter of fact, because John, you know, when you have facial hair, you like, you know, when you're, it's just, it becomes a thing you play with, right? That sounds kind of gross. But so my husband was like, "Don't do that. It makes you seem like you're not paying attention to when people are talking." And I felt, so now I'm self-conscious, so now I don't. Right, but it just feels good because you're actually listening, but now you have this whole new landscape that was never there before that keeps your attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I can say the relationship to playing with it changes the longer it gets. Like, the longest I've ever had when I was in the Arctic, it's more like you're not playing with it so much as like desperately trying to keep things out of it. Anyway, what's that?
Like ramen, that's we trying exactly. to keep ramen out of your beard.
Or just honestly, like just drinking water, is really annoying when you have long facial hair because the water gets like trapped in your mustache. You don't want to drink anything. You have to use straws. It's weird. Anyway, Steph Mont says, OMG, John, when you guys hosted movie night last summer, I knew your wife looked familiar. She has been in a few of my favorite TV shows. Happy B-Day, Arlene. That's awesome that you've seen her. Yeah, she's been in a bunch of stuff. She's been in a ton of shows and some movies as well. And now is creating some. So stay tuned for those. And with that said, why don't we jump back into the news, Jason?
Let's do it.
Okay. Yesterday, so much was revealed. New security footage of the rioters breaking into the Capitol. Officer Goodman narrowly saving Mitt Romney from the crowd, which we'll talk about. We'll get to Lindsey Graham eventually too, don't worry about that. But with all that was revealed and mashed up so perfectly with what Trump did and didn't do on that day, we now have to play the game of, will any of this matter? By finding out what the Republicans think about it. No, it won't. So let's go through a few. Ben Siegel asked, did the videos change your mind at all about conviction? That was to Senator Roy Blunt, who said, I mean, you have a summer where people all over the country were doing similar kinds of things. I don't know what the other side will show from Seattle and Portland and other places. So
okay,
that's how serious Roy Blunt is being about the entire thing. If there's violence that exists elsewhere, then it doesn't matter what people do. Yes, everybody remembers the BLM march in St. Louis of late August that happened because Nancy Pelosi flew over there and told people to attack a particular building. No, that didn't happen. There's no connection like that. And they're not even trying to allege a connection like that because they know it doesn't exist. They are literally just both sidesing the concept of bad things. If bad things happen here, then there's no consequences for anything. If I ever get like charged with murder, I'm just gonna say, well, you know, someone punched someone a while ago. So are you really going to get mad at me? Now, that's obviously stupid. That's below the level of even really that should be discussed on our show. But that is above the level of the thought process of Senator Roy Blunt. That's fun, Jason.
It is fun. I found some of the reasoning that these people had in regards to what was being revealed and uncovered and unearthed during yesterday's trial. John, I have to say, I listened to majority of it on NPR because I was driving around. And when the representative from the US Virgin Islands started and showing video, it was just so alarming to me what actually happened inside of the Capitol. And for people to, as I said earlier, completely jettison the fact of human life being at risk for the sake of politics, and doesn't matter what side of the aisle you fall on, anyone with a moral conscience can see that what happened there was could have ended way worse than it did. The loss of human life could have been exponentially more than it was that day. And so for these politicians to try to reason in these dumbed down ways is not shocking or surprising, but also it's like, come on, like for once put down whatever your belief system is and recognize that that was an S show.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But like some of these people are going to do a little bit better of a job of pretending that they're paying attention to what happens or their mind is open. To give you an idea of how open Roy Blunt's mind is, he said this this morning, I'm not sure when our side starts, but Saturday's looking better all the time. So when he says our side, he means the lawyers defending Donald Trump. He's a juror in this trial and he's saying our side because that's allowed. You can do that. Okay, so some in the GOP are at least trying to pretend that they are paying attention to the trial, that the video is actually potentially affecting them. Some not so much. So here's a more of a roundup of different Republican senators. Ali Zaslav put together a great little thread compiling some of these comments. So Rick Scott said, I watched what he said. He never said someone should break in. Because again, you have to very specifically say what you want the murderous mob to do or else it doesn't count. Many's the time that I've hired a hitman and at the last second remembered, I can't tell the hitman exactly how to kill someone because then it would be a crime. Mm-hmm. So that's Scott. Langford said, Trump has had 100 rallies and we've never seen that before. So that's the tough one to be able to link. Okay. But they did walk directly from this rally to the Capitol and then sack it. So I don't think it's that hard to link. I think it's about a walk from a rally to the Capitol hard to link. It's about that direct, actually. It's so direct, you don't need to take public transit. You can just walk it. But Lankford, not convinced. So I don't know. Like, we're going to turn to some who say that it's it bothered them or they have tears in their eyes or whatever, Jason. But any other thoughts about what we saw yesterday?
Yes, for semantics with all of those tweets and quotes from these from people that are in support of Trump. Because here's the thing, much like Charlottesville, these white nationalists and these people Trump interpreted, sorry, past tense, because no longer in office, or maybe they still are interpreting, but his rhetoric as a call to action, right? As a rallying cry, as releasing the Kraken, if you will. So
to completely
fly in the face of the intelligence. Anyone that was watching or present what's happening and all these politicians are not stupid people, right? So it's like saying, well, I don't know, like the dog bit your hand off, but you know what? The dog's never been violent before, but it bit your hand off. So, I mean, we got to excuse that. Trump has been inciting violence. And violence against people doesn't always have to be physical. I say this time and time again, you don't have to hit someone to promote violence or provoke violence or call violence on someone. It could be from what Trump has done with tweets. It could be with subliminal messages. There's so many different ways that people interpret violence. And I feel that Trump and his base or whoever's working for him, sending his tweets, whatever witchcraft he has going on, has been able to do that because his base has interpreted it as such. So for them to send these tweets and act like that's not the case is dumb. And I feel listening to the trial yesterday, and I'm hoping that those tweets that they're compiling that have shown that violence will turn the tide in this impeachment trial. I mean, I could be wrong. It could be my own naivete, but praying that that's going to happen. Continue.
If it's something good, I don't think it's going to happen. But there are some in the GOP who want you to believe. Or no, that they were affected by what they saw yesterday, that video evidence. Let's see. Senator Collins said it was riveting, compelling. You could hear a pin drop. I think she was talking about the sequel to A Quiet Place. She must have gotten early access to it. Murkowski said, we lived this once and that was awful. Moran said, a graphic, disgusting. Sullivan said, it brings back a lot of anger. Tillis said, it makes me angry. Portman said it was reliving a horrible day, and that's not easy. Grassley said it's a horrendous situation. Rick Scott, who voted against certifying the Biden's Electoral College results in Pennsylvania, said it's disgusting. I think talking about his own conduct, I'm not sure. And Senator John Thune, the Republican minority whip and member of GOP leadership, said the House impeachment managers did a good job of connecting the dots. Okay, so they were all affected. And they're all going to get at least a little bit of credit for saying that in comparison to people like Scott and Lankford, and eventually we'll get to Lindsey Graham. They seem reasonable by comparison, but are they going to vote to convict him? Do they think that it's disgusting and they understand the obvious link to Donald Trump there? I don't believe that very many, maybe Collins and Murkowski, maybe one more of the others, but I think the vast majority of those who are like, no, totally, like it affected me. I had tears in my eyes. Please say that I'm reasonable and I have a heart and that I'm gonna say that Trump should be able to go. That's my theory.
I agree with that too, John. That's the rub right there. And also, let's enter cancel culture into all of this, right? We have these statements from people who know that to be on the right side of history right now is to say those things. Is to make sure that I got my soundbite, my tweet, my quote, my phrase, my whatever out there in the universe in cyberspace. So when it does come time for coming down the road, I knew, hey, my hands are clean to some capacity. That's them doing damage control. That's them Olivia Poping the situation, getting in front of it. Because so as you mentioned, those people were in support of Trump and have known what Trump had been doing for a while. It was so disgusting. Oh my God, I just couldn't believe what was happening. And mind you, maybe for them, John, maybe when violence showed up at their doorstep, when violence arrived adjacent to their life, And it wasn't, and they got rid of that old not in my own backyard mentality because it wasn't happening to them. They had a change of heart because they weren't being affected directly by things like racism, by discrimination, all these things that a lot of Americans have had to deal with and have had to be resilient in. They've been sheltered and secured from that. So when the fight showed up at their doorstep, sure, it's gonna arouse a different kind of feeling and a different kind of thought process. So I will give them that. I mean, I would imagine maybe one out of the five that was actually true for, probably. Maybe. However, I do think because cancel culture is prevalent and people don't, and with places like Twitter and Instagram and every media outlet that finally feels okay enough to go against Trump and not and really say how they truly feel, they don't want to be also mentioned in these forthcoming articles that are going to be scathing and are going to have lasting effects on these people's careers after it's all said and done.
Maybe, and I think it might even be more than one out of five, but. I also like we've seen so many times the like in the moment you say the one thing and then you backtrack. And I mean, the woman who was the representative was criticizing AOC, saying there was nobody in the hallway. The day after the attack, she was saying, I was lucky that Dan Crenshaw was there. I'm going to carry a gun from now on. I was hunkered down in my room. A month later, she's fundraising off of saying AOC's lying about it. What does Senator Lindsey Graham think about the Sixth and Trump's culpability? Well, it turns out it really depends on if you talk to Lindsey Graham on January 7th or Lindsey Graham today. Because last night, after seeing all of that footage about the attack and what Trump said and what he tweeted, here is what he had to say on Sean Hannity's show.
Your viewers, the not guilty vote is growing after today. I think most Republicans found the presentation by the House managers offensive and absurd. We all know what happened in the Capitol was terrible. I hope everybody involved that broke into the Capitol goes to jail. But I don't remember any of these House managers saying a damn thing when they were trying to break into my house and going after Susan Collins and spitting on all of us. If this is a problem for a politician to give the speech that President Trump did, well, then Kamala Harris has a real problem because she actively engaged in bailing out rioters. And here's what I would suggest. If you're a politician trying to raise bail for people accused of rioting, you're inciting more riots. But here's.
Okay, so he thinks serious, just not serious enough to do anything about it here. That's the amazing thing about whataboutism. He's like, well, you're saying this is bad, but this is just as bad, but I don't want to do anything about either of them. Well, then it's just a distraction. You don't actually care. And also, he was on Mark Levin and he had this to say.
Here's what I want to know. What did Nancy Pelosi know and when did she know it? If this was widely known by the FBI and Capitol Hill Police that people were planning to come to Washington before the 6th to create violence, I want to know, did she know about that?
Okay, so somebody's responsible, but it's probably Nancy Pelosi, not the guy who actually brought them there and then sent them to the Capitol. So, Jason, this is what he's saying now. What we saw yesterday from the House managers, it was absurd. It was offensive. How dare they? And it definitely doesn't prove that Trump had any relationship whatsoever to what happened on the 6th.
Everyone's it's trying to cover their own ass to position themselves in a space that makes them look the best. That's all I can say about that.
Well, let's see what you make of this. If you don't like Lindsey Graham last night, I get it. I don't like him either. What about Lindsey Graham on the 6th and the 7th? So the day after the attack, he said, when it comes to accountability, the president needs to understand that his actions were the problem, not the solution. His actions were the problem. So what does that mean, Lindsey Graham? Which actions? How were they the problem? Because you're saying he didn't have anything to do with it. So why the day after were his actions the problem, not the solution? And why is it that that night on the 6th, you said, all I can say is count me out. Enough is enough. Count you out of what?
What?
Enough is enough of what? What have you finally reached enough of? You now don't have enough. 20 days later, suddenly you could take a little bit more, I guess. But at that point, you'd had enough is enough. Enough of what? And what were Trump's actions? Because you seem to be pretty clear that you finally reached a line that you're not willing to cross, and that Trump's actions took us there. But now, like a month later, well, come on, it's absurd for there to be any consequences.
It's a clear as day example of someone who is trying to, one, doesn't know who to enlighten himself. We don't know what kind of coercion is going on behind the scenes with these politicians, because politicians are really good of innuendo. They're really good of giving you just enough to be skeptical or question, but not really going forth and being completely honest and transparent. From January 7th to now, two stark, very starkly different takes and feelings on everything. So as far as Lindsey Graham's concerned, I could care what he's saying seriously, but great questions. What are you fed up with though? And why can't you just come out and say it? What is the fear of being, as I said, transparent and letting people know exactly what you're talking about then, if you do know something or you are fed up with said actions of the former president? I don't, it reminds me of like a really bad like John Grisham novel, or like John Clancy, where like, you know, the government's working behind the scenes and they're showing up at your house and knocking on your door, and like you wake up in the morning and someone's over your bed looking at you saying, "Don't you say anything." It's so weird. Like, what's the fear? That's what I want to know, is what's the telling the truth?
I mean, people are speculating in the comments that enough is enough with Trump, and then suddenly, remember, he was chased through an airport by those same people from that, and he was suddenly scared. And maybe he thought, well, enough is enough for me. Maybe enough is enough for everyone. Maybe finally we're all going to turn and I'll be able to reveal this whole time I've despised this orange MF-er. And then it didn't happen. Most Republicans stayed with Trump, and they were not just deferential to him, but even crazier people like Marjorie Greene. And suddenly realize, oh wait, no, everything isn't changing. We're still in the pocket of Trump. I still want to be relevant, so I guess suddenly it's all absurd. Anyway,
great, John. There it is. People still want to be relevant, because they're realizing that it's like when you have the school bully and his minions. The nerd kicks the hell out of the bully. The bully's dethroned. All the minions defect, and it's a changing of the guard, right?
Yeah.
That follow blindly are like, where do I go now? I have no spine, no backbone. Like, who's gonna love me now? I think that's what's happening with a lot of these people who are so aggressively and so openly and actively and forcefully supporting Trump in every single thing he tried to put in motion, every single tweet, every single idea. As I said earlier, their future is in jeopardy in some capacity. I would think that's the only logical explanation I could have for what we're seeing now. The type of disloyalty that is copiously being rained down by these people.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all worried about the future and not about the right things, all from a very personal point of view. So many people around the nation were forced to really take stock of what happened on January 6th, thanks to the video that was played during the second day of the impeachment trial. And so many people have been saying, how can you possibly think that Trump wasn't responsible after watching this video? Well, I've got an answer for you, and it's a tricky one. What if you never watched the video? What if, for instance, you were one of the many people across America that got your news from Fox News, and as these sorts of headlines make clear, you didn't see it because Fox News just cut away from the Senate trial when they turned to all of that footage and instead started talking about, for instance, the kitten lawyer, who I will grant you, that is a hilarious story. But when you are Judge Jeanine Pirro cutting away from the impeachment trial to talk about how he's not a cat, he says he's not a cat. I think I know what you're doing there. I think you don't want people to see the footage because you know how damning it is. So understand, if you're watching this right now, you may think, how could they not accept it? many of them won't have to accept it because they've opted into a media bubble that protects them from inconvenient videos and facts and narratives and all of that. And they get to just think, oh yeah, no, it didn't really happen. It wasn't that bad. Nobody died. It was all Antifa anyway. And that's basically what's going on over there. We're gonna have a little bit of footage for you, but Jason, I wanted you to give you a chance to respond.
Well, I found it just a little, I don't know, weird that, okay, look, Fox, from a network standpoint, I'm gonna talk about this from like a ratings network standpoint, okay? Like, let's, because you know, at the end of the day, it's about dollars and cents. For Fox to cut away from that and not show that was to their detriment, because sure, you said they've opted into a media bubble that protects them from inconvenient truths and reporting inconvenient things like this. However, as journalists, that is your job, is to report the news. Yep. One, regardless of, again, on what side of the aisle you lean on, report the effing news. Two, yesterday the trial was the most watched and talked about thing all day. I was glued. I didn't get out of my car because I could not get away from NPR listening to it. So from a ratings and a business standpoint, that was a stupid move, Fox News. You want people to come to your platform and consume your media on what's trending that day. And yesterday, that was the most trending thing in America. So that was dumb. I do agree with you on the kitten lawyer thing, but that's not, now it's not so funny a day later. But maybe, who knows what the reasoning behind that? Just, it was a dumb move from Fox. Yeah. That should have been the only thing they should have been talking about in some capacity. Even if it would have been biased in favor of Trump, they still should have given their audience and their public that kind of content.
Well, Jason, they also did that, because they did have an episode of The Five, which is apparently still a show. So if you're watching this and you don't watch Fox, first of all, good choice for wellness and all of that. I want you to understand what was happening. So for hours, all of this stuff was going on the impeachment, and it was fascinating. I watched CNN. That's how fascinating it was. I don't normally do that. And so The Five comes on and they do a solid block about the impeachment trial, but they weren't watching it because, let's be very clear, they were doing a live show. They weren't like commenting occasionally while the footage played. They were doing their show instead of watching it, but commenting on it to say that you shouldn't pay attention to it, that nothing was being shown, but they quite literally had no idea what they were talking about because it was going on while they were talking about it instead of watching it. So they kind of got the best of both worlds, Jason. They were technically talking about the impeachment. So if you're a right winger, you can go there and you will only get their point of view of what they speculate is happening, because they don't know what is happening because they're not watching what is happening. It was actually, it was an amazing meta sort of media moment.
It was genius and it worked out for them beautifully. However, from a production standpoint, it should have been like a Fox News special report kind of situation where all the content, all the broadcasts, all the on-air activity was based on this trial. I saw that five episode, and some of the people were actually triggered in that episode. There was an argument that happened. Like there's some screaming and yelling, but it was this weird perfect storm of, we kind of know what's going on, we kind of don't know what's going on, and it's safe for us and it's working out for us beautifully, so we're gonna continue.
Yeah, that's what it
that's
is.
That's to be honest, that is a work, and you work in live television. Sometimes that's the easiest way to go, because you just are like, well, you know, we'll keep you up to date. People are in your ear. You're trying to, like, you know, fill time. You're trying to make something happen. And by doing all that, time goes and the show's over. So it worked out for them.
Yeah, it was. I would like to imagine that it's pretty see through, but it was designed to distract, and that's what it did. Now. Yeah. Waking up this morning, what does Fox have to say about what happened yesterday with the impeachment trial? Well, here is a little bit of a disagreement, starting off with Kilby.
A lot of video. Day one was full of video, almost like the cold open to a Rachel Maddow show. And then this, some of the surveillance video we had not seen yet. No doubt about it. Pence, Pelosi, and Romney were in danger. No doubt about it. It was really bad. It was a pleasure, though, to hear cops, police officers being praised for a change from Democrats. We haven't heard that in about 2 years, and they should be praised every day, and especially the way they acted here. They never should have had the January 6th rally. Does anyone disagree with that? If President Trump wanted to show his popularity, win Georgia, at least one of the seats. That would have actually shown more. It got out of control. I don't think he ever intended that, and that's the point. Was President Trump having a rally get them fired up? Did he ever intend for them to breach the building and threaten to kill his vice president, the most loyal person he had, Mitt Romney, who he's had disagreement from his party? And they were looking for some of the more high profile lawmakers, no doubt about it. But it became very redundant, too. It was like the same thing, the same person showing more emotion, inciting something personal about them. And that's when I think they're beginning to lose the public. As we get set for day three, they're going to finish up with some more testimony.
Right.
And then we got more of this. And then we're going to see what the Trump team has.
Yeah. Yeah. They found an interesting legal loophole, which is crimes aren't crimes if it's presented in a redundant way. And they're losing the American people. I'm sure that's a result of Kilmeade poring over tracking polls of what people think. It's just say what you want. It's a fun way to live your life. Just imagine the world you want to live in and say that it's true.
And leave Rachel Maddow alone. What has she done to you? Like, how dare you? How dare you throw shade at Rachel Maddow?
Mm-hmm.
But to what he said about people making it personal and it's becoming redundant, I disagree with illuminating things from yesterday, John, was the, as I said earlier, the uncovering and unearthing of all this new footage and all these new elements to what happened on that day, because America wanted to know. On January 6th, many people were doing what we're doing now, sitting at home, working. All of a sudden, all this news is pouring in, all this media, all these images of what's happening that we didn't get a boots on the ground experience when it came to the events of that day, right? And so now you have people that were actually there that are saying, okay, listen, this is an actual factual account as to what transpired on January 6th. And I think a lot of people wanted that to further galvanize and cement their feelings on what exactly happened. I don't think people are disinterested. I think we want more of that. I think we're demanding more of that. I think that was one of the most compelling parts of the trial for me, was the actual accounts of people who were there. And then connecting the dots, is a term they're using now with Trump's tweets, connecting the dots as to, this has been possibly a plan that has been in the works for, who knows, weeks, months, maybe days, no one knows. So I think he's wrong there.
I did appreciate the little burns from Kilmeade about, like, if you want to prove how popular I'm, maybe win a seat. I like that. I was like, man, I should have thought of that. But overall, saying that, like, no, it has no connection. Dude, what are you talking about? He brought them there. It's an amazing point that they've been trying to make over the past week, not just Kilmeade, but like generally the right, is that you can't say he incited it, because those people came to the Capitol wanting to do that.
Right.
As if Trump sprung into existence the morning of January 6th and hadn't been telling them for months to go there and what they should do there. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, like, it just got out of control and that's not what he wanted. Like, it might be one thing if Trump had done all of this stuff inciting the violence beforehand, and then once it was happening, he really tried to pump the brakes and express remorse and all of that. But everything that's come out since then was he still attacked Pence after Pence had already been rushed away. He told them he loved them. They're very special. These are the things that happen when it's so unceremoniously stolen. He still hasn't expressed remorse weeks later. He's still saying the election was stolen weeks later. Like, if he actually was shocked at how it spun out of control and that wasn't what he wanted, he has provided us no evidence that that is the case. Even easy rhetorical, like, cheap apology evidence, he won't do that even. So Brian Kilmeade, who's willing to, like, burn him a little bit, is either so dense that he can't put these things together, or is still in the pocket of Trump and is unwilling to criticize him in a fundamental way that could lead more of the viewers to thinking he needs to be convicted in this trial.
John, it's an amalgamation of both. it's a nice, spicy, yummy, delicious gumbo of both. And to your point, which you articulate so eloquently, is much like with Trump's statement of bad people on both sides, not willing to come out and denounce white supremacy when the pressure has been put on. If you are truly remorseful and you truly believe and you want to take accountability and responsibility for your base, then you come out and say, hey, something or another. You come out and make some kind of statement, even if it's like, I feel like this is wrong, don't do it. We'll take anything at this point. But the simple fact that he chooses not to do that is very telling of how he truly feels. How else can you interpret that? How else can you interpret that? There's no other way. You spinning your wheels, John, not your wheels per se, but just the wheels of the American people trying to rationalize and think, okay, well, what does he mean by this? Like, what's the innuendo? No, there's no innuendo. This is how he truly feels.
Yeah.
That's it. Anyone that wants to say otherwise would have done that by now.
There
would have been an obligatory response, an obligatory apology, and that would have been that. And it would have been issued in writing, it would have been picked up everywhere, and then we would have kept it moving. But that hasn't happened yet. So the writing's on the wall. It is what it is. It's clear as day.
Indisputable. And now it's time for news from around the world. And meanwhile, in Japan, the Olympics are coming. Remember, they were postponed from last year, so we're actually gonna have them now, even though the pandemic is very much still here. And they're taking an interesting approach to it, I would say. Athletes won't have to be vaccinated. They won't have to quarantine when they get to Tokyo, but they are required to test negative for the coronavirus, which is gonna be fine because those things never fail. And once they get there, the advice they're being given by Japan is interesting. Take a look at this. The International Olympic Committee is telling athletes to, quote, avoid unnecessary forms of physical contact like hugs, high fives, handshakes, and to keep 2 meters or 6 feet apart from other athletes during the games to reduce the risk of spreading the coronavirus. Now, I want you to somehow mesh that with the fact that they're going to be providing 150,000 free condoms purely for sex that takes place from at least 2 meters apart. So that is not a new thing for the 11,000 athletes. God damn, it's a lot of sex per athlete. But anyway, this is not a new thing. They always hand out the condoms, but this is a pandemic. And they're like, don't high five, but you can do like, you know, I'm not even gonna fill in the blanks, but you know where that joke is going.
Right.
So Jason, what do you think?
I think this, the IOC, what are they smoking? That's, you know, what essentially, look, I read this and thought, how can I engage in coitus from 2 meters? I mean,
they are athletes.
Hey, you know, and some people possess apparatuses that allow them to do that. I am not one of them, so that would be kind of hard to do. But I think it's irresponsible, John, that they're saying that these people do not have to be tested, because here in the States, you have. Places like NBC Universal and that have lots of employees that have to be tested on a day-to-day basis, right? Before they come into work. And they have the money to do that. The IOC and the Olympic Committee that is organizing the Tokyo Games, they have the funds to make sure that testing can be done and will not disrupt the natural flow or how they want these games to go. So I think that's very irresponsible. I think that they're not being smart about this. And I understand Olympiads are special. 2020, these athletes train for 4 years, they give up their lives. It's a whole story, it's a whole movement, it's a whole journey. And for them to be postponed last year, we get there's a pandemic. We are still in a pandemic where responsibility needs to happen, because you don't want an outbreak of corona at the Olympics to happen while these people have been waiting to compete in the games. So you're not only doing a disservice and putting people that work the games in jeopardy, you're also not honoring the athletes. They need to rethink this quickly. They need to refigure this sooner than later.
Exactly, and they can make quick changes. The president of the Tokyo Olympics is gonna resign following sexist remarks. So they can respond to criticism. I would say at the very least, if you're gonna be handing out condoms, I remember in one of the Naked Gun movies, they had whole body condoms. I would suggest those perhaps. And meanwhile,
I wanna know. I want to know how to have sex from 2 meters apart. Like, wield the wand, Harry. Let me know.
I'll give you some tips.
What kind of magic are you guys employing over there, Katsupon?
Oh my God, rhythmic gymnastics. That's how they do it. Meanwhile, Lynn. Meanwhile, you guys made a Toad Country graphic for that. It's supposed to be Mexico. But meanwhile, in Toad Country, the toads and presumably conservationists would really prefer if you would stop milking the toads, as it's threatening the survival of the species, as one would imagine. So what goes into milking a toad is not nearly as much as what comes out of the toad. So the Sonoran Desert Toad possesses a potent psychedelic compound which can be used for hallucinogenic purposes. In order to get your hands on the white slime, you must tickle the animal's glands until this is secreted, which is basically how you get white slime in all situations. But anyway, people are going to toads. Here is a representative toad who looks like he would really prefer if you would stop milking him. And they are milking them. Now, this is dangerous for a species that's already endangered in California, threatened in New Mexico, and is also at risk in other areas like in Mexico or Toad Country, depending on who your producers are. So people do this to get a psychedelic experience. But in the end, if enough people do it, this entire species could go extinct. So please don't milk the toads. Jason.
I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, milking toads. So I'm really sad that this is happening. I loved my toad milking parties with my friends back in high school. We milked the hell out of some toads, John. I mean, I was the king toad milker. My toad milking skills were like ridiculous. As a matter of fact, I lettered in toad milking. That's how dope I was. JK. However, last week, my dog here in Florida tried to eat a toad and foamed at the mouth incessantly for hours. I thought my dog was going to die, and I did not know that toads are toxic. So leave the toads alone. The toads did nothing to you. Free the toads, save the toads, and stop trying to milk the toads. Ew, it sounds gross. Like they said, anything that secretes sounds nasty. Like it secretes something.
Jason, you have changed, because I heard that when you were young, you could milk a toad from 2 meters away. Anyway, don't
go milk the toads. Go milking farm.
Animals are innocent. That's what people seem to be forgetting.
They are.
And meanwhile, in Saudi Arabia, they really want you to believe that they are starting to take human rights seriously at long last. And they did a big symbolic thing, which is important in its own right to show that. They've released Lujain Al-Hathloul, one of the country's most prominent women's rights activists, from prison earlier this week, in the clearest sign yet that the kingdom's leaders were taking steps to assuage President Biden's complaints about human rights violations. Now, we're going to give commentary on that plot, but first I want to focus on the activist that was actually released. Hathloul has been among the most visible faces of an unrelenting Saudi crackdown on human rights advocates, dissidents, and civil society activists. Her imprisonment, which lasted 1,001 days, and allegations that she'd been tortured, sparked an international outcry. Now, in recent weeks, they've tried to enhance their brand, including with reconciliation with its neighbor Qatar, and then the release of activists jailed in what human rights groups say were bogus terrorism-related charges. The most prominent of these is Hathloul, who is well known for campaigning for women's right to drive and for the abolition of Saudi guardianship laws, which require women to obtain a male relative's consent for major decisions, including education and travel. But despite this, Hathloul and others have not been acquitted by Saudi courts and remain under tight restrictions that prevent them from leaving the kingdom. Human rights activists are pressing for these constraints to be lifted entirely. But that would require an actual commitment to human rights, civil rights, women's rights, and all of that, which is a little bit more significant and harder to get to than just sort of releasing her kind of for now to get a little bit of good press and maybe convince Biden to go easy on them. What do you think?
Well, I think that this is an archaic form of life that they have going on there. And you know, they're trying to, the article said they're rebranding, which was like rebranding, what are they, Chrysler? But it's because I felt like, okay, fine. Trump was in office, they had a great relationship with Trump. Their kingpin has left. So now they're thinking like, okay, well, we don't have anyone that's gonna back us. So let's try to rebrand and be better. I think that it comes down to, as you said, really wanting to change and value human rights in a place that has a death penalty, that executes people for like nonviolent offenses, that executes people for drug offenses, for having marijuana. They're gonna, they will execute, you will be sent, given the death penalty for having a hallucinogenic substance there, you know? So It's not. I'm not surprised that this is how this is going. But I am happy that this woman's on the way to having a better life after serving time. And her family has said that she's changed. I mean, this is someone who was sentenced to 5 years in prison and was, and apparently was able to get out because of good behavior or because of time served, right? Mm-hmm. But it's beyond that. So much needs to change there. And I understand that religion and how things have been, historically valued there are a big reason why it hasn't. But with Biden now in office, at least they're trying to turn the tide, even though it's taking longer than we would like. However, that's still not enough, right? There's so much work that needs to be done in that region because they have such extreme ways of dealing with things, John. It's like, where does this come from? Well, why would I need to be sentenced chapstick, right? You know, I agree.
And I really do wish that I thought that this sort of change was an actual serious sign of progress rather than, oh my God, Biden is going to cut off US support for the war in Yemen and he's not going to be selling Saudi Arabia weapons and they're going to be doing a little bit more investigation of the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Like it really does seem to me to be sort of trying to regain access to those military and economic resources. We'll see. And in the past, like Trump obviously was massively supportive of Saudi Arabia, but he's hardly the first US president to do that. And we don't know for sure what long-term Biden's relationship with Saudi Arabia will be. So we're gonna have to be keeping an eye on that. For Lujain Hathloul, that it's good news. Glad to see it. Hopefully the first of many signs, but we'll be watching and we'll find out. In any event, Jason, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Had a lot of fun with you, as always. Good luck in all of your endeavors, beard related or otherwise.
When I come back on the damage report, John, my beard's gonna be so amazing that I don't know. They may have to harvest it for R&D for growing facial hair because I'm gonna make sure it's mutant status. Just kidding, John. It's always a pleasure hanging out with the Young Turks. You're a king. Bye, everyone. Talk soon.
If you had hoped that after losing his bid for re-election, Donald Trump would decide to fade away into the darkness, live a dignified, quiet life, perhaps painting dog portraits off outside of the public spotlight, well, then you don't know who Donald Trump is, and you apparently don't know all of the different tools he has at his disposal to continue to be a daily plague on our lives. But we have someone who's well-versed in all of those tools and is joining us now to discuss. The senior Washington correspondent for Business Insider. Welcome back to the show, Dave Leventhal.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. So, 7 huge reasons Donald Trump isn't going away. That's your article available at Business Insider. So, tell us about this. Donald Trump, are these purely hypothetical tools? Are there reasons to believe that some of the things you profiled in your piece are being deployed or will soon be deployed to bring Donald Trump back into our lives?
Most of these are quite real, couple hypothetical, but most of them are pretty concrete. But they're flying below the radar as we pay attention to obviously the impeachment trial and Joe Biden's administration coming online. Donald Trump has definitely faded away in a very real sense in that he's not on Twitter, he's not in your face every day, he's not on television, he's not on the radio, and yet he is still there. He's very present and he's waiting to make a comeback of one sort or another. Probably the most notable way that Donald Trump is staging this comeback is through a political action committee that he created in November while he was in the midst of railing against the election results. It's a political action committee called Save America. It raised about $33 million over the final few weeks of 2020. And it didn't spend a cent on anything political. All that money just went to Donald Trump. And it's a kind of committee that Donald Trump himself controls, both operationally and financially too. So he's sitting on a ton of money. And of course, he's got six other things going on too, which I suspect we're gonna get to very soon.
We will. Really fast on that one. It is still a PAC, so he can spend the money not on future campaigns, right, but on political activity ads and things like that. And he certainly can't just take the money himself, although in theory he could route it through his various businesses, right?
The rules governing these types of political action committees are pretty loose. So could Donald Trump use this money, for example, to pay for his own travel? Yes. Could he use this money to pay for meals or close consultants or things that could have some potential benefit? Yes. Could he spend this money at his own properties? Yes, he could as well. So there are definitely some kind of personal financial uses that do come in play with this particular brand of political action committee. But he definitely can use this money that he's gotten from all of his supporters that he very much raised in the context of stop the steal, defend the election. These were sort of the come-ons that Donald Trump was using over the last few weeks of 2020 to raise money for this group. And he didn't use it for any of that. Donald Trump ostensibly can use this money for any other purpose, though, politically speaking, or kind of on the edge of politically speaking.
Okay, so that first one, that's a big one and could have very significant implications either for his own personal political future or for the launching of a third party, the launching of family members' campaigns. What are some of the other most noteworthy ones? Obviously, people should go and they should read the full article to get your full rundown on all seven. But what are some others that you think are worthy of mention?
One very notable one that has very much flown under the radar is Donald Trump has created a post-presidency office. This is an office that most presidents create after they have left the White House. It's official. He's based it right in Mar-a-Lago where he lives. It has a small staff. It, at least in part, is taxpayer funded. And Donald Trump can use this basically as a megaphone for himself to communicate with the public writ large and otherwise have an official presence that is very much steeped in politics, but still tied to his official role as president of the United States and by virtue of him being a former president of the United States. Now, you mentioned the notion of another party. That also, too, is very high on this list because it kind of cuts two ways. Our sourcing, our reporting shows that Donald Trump has very much been considering the notion of forming his own party. He calls it the Patriot Party. Whether that's going to happen, whether that's going to come to fruition, we don't know yet. Donald Trump may not know yet, but it's something that is being considered. Now, also too, there's some very recent reporting about the notion of Republicans who don't like Donald Trump, who are still part of the Republican Party, but are anti-Trumpers, breaking away from the Republican Party, basically leaving the Republican Party to Donald Trump and creating their own third party too. So it's a very fluid situation with a huge, huge financial consideration too, because the Republican Party and Donald Trump together, they have that huge, massive database of all the tens of millions of people who've given money to Donald Trump, who voted for Donald Trump, supported Donald Trump. That is a huge, massive asset that regardless of what Donald Trump does in the future, he's going to want to control. So a lot of drama on that end too.
So a lot of significant things there. I want to just first of all start with the office, and I want to ask you a stupid question. Obviously, other past presidents have had these offices, and I get that for some of them it could be maintaining correspondence with foreign leaders. It could be charity and advocacy work. For Donald Trump, I sort of assume that there's not going to be as much of that. So what is the difference between his official office and like me hiring a personal assistant? What does it actually technically matter? I mean, you said it was possibly taxpayer funded, so that is a difference. But what are some other differences? What does it mean that he has this office? Why should people care about that?
And you're right, there are government resources that do go into play for an office of this sort. But what does it mean? I mean, it gives basically the stamp of the United States of America on this office. It gives the imprimatur of officialdom for Donald Trump, which we are currently right now debating as to whether Donald Trump should be convicted on an account of insurrection. And yet Donald Trump as we speak right now. If you go to his official office website, there's the seal right there. So as a result, Donald Trump can have this very official platform from which he can send emails, communications, make official statements. And he has done already. It's something to very much keep an eye on. It's in its nascent state. It's just started, literally only a few days old. So where it goes from here, we don't know yet. And again, I feel like a broken record. Donald Trump may not himself know yet, but it definitely bears watching.
Yeah. You know, of course, we haven't had a lot of one-term presidents in recent decades. It's pretty rare. So sort of zooming out a bit, overall, what is your impression of how the way Donald Trump is setting up the next couple of years might compare to some past presidents? And how different, hypothetically, do you think it is than any other one-term president might approach their future career? Understanding, of course, that we haven't had a lot of those.
Everything about Donald Trump revolves around the question of whether he is going to run for the presidency in 2024. Now, if he's convicted in his impeachment trial, and then the Senate moves to ban him from ever running for office again, then we're having a very different conversation here, John, but that's probably not going to happen. So the question will still remain, will Donald Trump use these various vehicles as a precursor for him doing another thing, which he has a part of our 7-point list, which is re-engage his presidential campaign. It still exists. His committee is still operational. It still has millions of dollars in it too. And you gotta remember that Donald Trump, literally on the day of his inauguration back in 2017, filed for re-election to run for re-election. There's only been one president, John, in US history who's ever won the presidency, lost the presidency, and then regained it again. That was Grover Cleveland. So we gotta dig pretty deep in the history books to find any analogous situation to the one that we've got right now. And Donald Trump, he'd be what, 77 years old or so when the presidency would be at hand in 2024. Joe Biden's 78, gonna be 79, you know, that's not something that is out of the question at this point.
That's true, although we do have to bear in mind that like chronologically he's 77, but he's got the body and mind of an 87-year-old at least. So I'm gonna ask you to speculate just a little bit based on you've done this rundown of all of these different tools he has. He's keeping a very low profile other than his very public divorce with SAG. He hasn't really said anything in a few weeks. Do you think acquittal, the next day he's active, he's doing hits on Fox and Friends about it? Or do you think that we've got a couple more months where he's gonna be doing his backroom machinations and things like that and it'll mostly be quiet? What does your gut say?
My gut says that Donald Trump is going to be a presence in our lives a lot more than he is today, sooner rather than later. And you know, maybe about 1,000 people threw something at their computer screens or their phones right now. But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump just simply doesn't have it in his character, doesn't have it in his makeup to go away for a long period of time. For decades, Donald Trump has been all about being in the public eye. So whether he likes it or not, he's gonna be in the public eye for good or for bad. Another one of the reasons he's gonna be in the public eye is because he has numerous points of legal peril that face him. He's got lawsuits, he's got a criminal investigation. He could have multiple criminal investigations, federal, state, local level. And remember that phone call back in Georgia where he tried to pressure election officials there to change their minds and basically change the result of the vote down in Georgia? Well, officials in Georgia right now are pursuing this as a criminal matter. So for years to come, Donald Trump, even if Donald Trump wanted to be out of the public eye, is still gonna be in the public eye because of the reckoning that is going to take place. Put impeachment aside, there's a whole bunch of other things that are gonna be going on, legally speaking, involving Donald Trump for a long time to come, John.
Well, everyone watching this, we've just scratched the surface. So if you'd like to learn more about some of the tools we didn't even mention, let alone go in deep on, Dave's article is available, 7 huge reasons Donald Trump isn't going away, as well as people who've been following the show for a while probably know Dave cranks out a lot of great work very often. Your most recent piece released earlier this morning about apparently thieves robbing political campaigns and how that might have affected Biden, fascinating stuff. So as always, Dave, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.